It's been a bad week.
Thank you very much indeed. Hello there, I'm Steve Punts.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
And welcome to It's Been a Bad Week, the programme where we attempt to discover who has had the worst week in the world over the last 7 days, and will thus win our coveted Worst Week of the Week award, awarded weekly on a week-by-week basis. And this week, we're coming to you live from the offices of BBC Sport. Because very little else is.
Yeah, it's not been a good week here. In fact, the excrement sandwich that is life has seldom been thicker than here at the home of Match of the Day, which ironically is now showing so late that it's virtually the next day.
Yes, it's very nice to be here, though. These, of course, are the very walls which once rang to the sound of David Coleman saying,
"And Alberto Wantarina opens his legs and shows his class."
The sound of Eddie Waring saying,
"Aye, aye, aye."
And then this week, of course, the sound of Des Lynham saying,
"Hey, tell you what, folks, talk about cycling, I'm on my bike. Talk about tennis, I've had it, love. Talk about Alex Ferguson, I've just been offered a massive amount of cash and shoved it in a safe."
Yes. Yes, more of that and all, doubtless. In the meantime, we have around us a full team of co-presenters, all of whom have accepted massive offers from ITV. Emma Clark, who is to take over as the woman who comes on after the news with the weird umbrella and all the rain pouring out of her head. John Culshaw, who bravely followed Gail Porter and got a job on ITV by putting his backside on the wall of the Houses of Parliament. Difference was, he didn't use a projector.
Just rumour.
And lastly but not leastly, a man who also followed Gail Porter until stopped by a court order, Mervyn Stutter.
And as ever, we have a guest judge to actually undertake the heavy responsibility of making the final decision and actually choosing the winner of the world's worst week. This week, a journalist known for her acute observational powers and razor-sharp cultural insights, so God knows what she's doing on this show, Victoria Curran.
Now, firstly, as you'll know, our guests have to declare their own interests at this point. If they want to put themselves forward, they must do it now. So, Victoria, have you yourself had a bad week?
Or as we call it, a Linford Christie.
Well, I was a bridesmaid on Sunday.
That's a bad week.
And, for the first time ever, and I was wearing one of those kind of voluminous blue smocks that your friend always has to put the old spinster bridesmaid in. But I had to walk up the aisle next to another bridesmaid who was not only a 6 foot blonde, but had taken her smock to a tailor's and come back with this kind of skin tight, plunging siren dress. Plus, I got hay fever from my bouquet, which also turned out to have little insects in it. So these little insects were crawling out of my bouquet, up my arms. I thought, I can't flick them off, because I might get the bride's mother in the eye. So I was trying to shake them off onto the carpet. So as far as the congregation was concerned, there was one stunning 6 foot radiant blonde, and one kind of dancing, sneezing, jerking midget.
You possibly put yourself forward as a candidate there, I think, because that's a stupendously bad week.
But before we move on, we've got to ask you a few quick questions on some of the week's short straw drawers, so just check you're suitably qualified as a judge. So the first question, why was it a bad week for Arnold Schwarzenegger? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. He can't have been cast as Hamlet again. No. I know.
Do you want a clue? I'll give you a clue. Oh, yeah, the story comes from the National Enquirer. Right. So it's not going to be to do with his stand on world free trade negotiations.
Right. Well, in that case, is it that he married his own mother and moved to space? Could that be it?
He married his own mother, moved to space with little insects crawling out of his sleeve. No, in fact, completely wrong answer. It was simpler than that. The answer is that Arnie had a bad week because he was reversing in his car and he ran over his own dog. It's awful, isn't it? It's very bad.
It's very sad.
He's got this massive Jeep thing called a Humvee and the dog never stood a chance. Hence his new catchphrase,
"I'll be back in over my dog."
I'll tell you...
I very much enjoyed saying that.
I'll be back in over my dog. over my dog.
The accident...
I'll be back in.
The accident... This really is a very genuinely bad bit of it. The accident was witnessed by Arnie's children.
Oh, it actually says that in the script. It's written R down there.
That is awful. And obviously they were very, very confused and upset because they couldn't understand why it hadn't turned liquid and reconstituted itself as a cyborg robo-dog. The real irony is that Arnie's big jeep was nicknamed the Terminator. And he's not going to call it that anymore. He told a local reporter, I couldn't bear climbing into it every day. It would be too distressing and bring back the awful memory. From now on, it's the Volkswagen Dog Crusher.
Do you think we made any of that up?
That's a terrible week for poor old Arnie.
Moving on. Vicky, why was it a bad week for earthworms in Darlington, County Durham?
When is it a good week for earthworms? It occurs to me, you never said that I have to get these right to prove my qualifications as a judge. Yeah, it hasn't really occurred to me that I'm the only judge you've got, so you can't sack me.
That's true.
Therefore, with no shame, I can tell you I don't know the earthworm's answer.
Didn't you know? Well, it's because Darlington Football Club have been having trouble with a waterlogged pitch. So they brought in 50... They brought in 50,000 earthworms to irrigate the ground. And there's just one small problem. They all drowned. Every last one.
It's a good story, that. It's very good. Well, it's always good when we have a journalist on as a guest, because we always just like to see whether they know any news. And
that was in the front of Guardian Society, so it's true as well.
It's good.
It's amazing for this show.
So, Vicky got those questions wrong. So,
she's well qualified.
Well qualified.
On now.
On the basis of this show. So let's move straight on to our first batch of candidates for the world's worst week.
Whippoorwill's call. And evening is nigh. I hurry to my blue heaven.
Yes, my blue heaven. Little clue there. The Reverend Speaker, Gerald Polly of Portland, Maine, has claimed that Frank Sinatra is one of thousands of people who have been barred from entering heaven because they died in California.
And that's in the Bible, is it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Revelations chapter 12, verse 3. No jeans, no trainers.
No Californians. Yeah. Now, according to Mr. Polly, anyone who snuffs it there will not be granted admission to the Elysian Fields for at least 100 years, and you're going to be held in a limbo state.
And why, pray tell us, does Mr. Polly think this?
Well, apart from the obvious, that he's as mad as the juice of a dum-dum tree. No, he thinks that the West Coast state is brimful of evil demons. He's also been in touch with the spirits of the deceased, including Sinatra, who are all apparently hanging round in a sort of great Gatwick departure lounge in the sky, waiting for their flight to eternity to start boarding. Now, apparently, and we quote the report,
Sinatra is so angry about being banned from heaven that Polly claims the powers that be sent Dean Martin to calm down old Blue Eyes.
That's a very good plan.
Well, I for one regard that as extremely convincing. The only slight problem with this theory is that Dean Martin also died in California. See, we did our research on this. Beverly Hills. So how did he get in? You see, Reverend Polly hasn't really thought this through, has he?
Well, I'm not sure that logic, you know, logic comes very high on the Reverend Polly's list of priorities, really.
If he believes what you get in the news on the net, that's a moron. They're never true. They're never true, yeah, these internet stories.
We've got no way of disproving it.
People go on about the information superhighway and the incredible power of the electronic media, but most of it, frankly, is medieval old codswallop like that, so what's the point? Let's have some proper news.
Okay, here's another story off the internet.
No.
Well, it's from California as well,
good.
This one.
Excellent.
Yeah. Now, automobile roadkill can predict your future. The types of animals you run over offer an insight into your future, according to roadkill psychic... Good grief. Terry Brill of Elk Grove, California.
If you run over a dog, expect your friendships to take a turn for the worse.
Particularly if you're friends with the owner of the dog. Now, does that mean that Arnold Schwarzenegger is Nobby No Mates? That's the question there.
That's very little to do with his dog. Running over a deer, according to this woman, apparently means you're about to hurt someone you love. Which is just a pun on the word deer, surely, isn't it? I don't know if she's ever heard of the Freudian slip, but I think that's what that is.
Running over a crow means you're not prepared
for the future.
Although, frankly, not as unprepared as the crow. And this is a good one.
If a bee collides with your windscreen, you need to take more time for yourself.
Why?
So true, isn't
it? Yes, mad. There's another one, actually, which says, if you run over a snake, you may be heading for a major accident. It's like the snake's mate saw it all and they've taken a note of your license plate. Actually, it's very easy to be a roadkill psychic. If a bee collides with your windscreen, you will shortly be visiting a car wash. How's that?
Do you know what's even worse? Is that all these animals are dying in California. So they're not even going to get to heaven. There's going to be Frank Sinatra there with Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, John Belushi, River Phoenix, and a crow with a big tire mark on it.
Now, talking of irritating Americans, and you probably saw this story, it's been a bad week for pasty manufacturers, because the brick-like, pastry-based heavyweight contender for the title of Cornwall's most famous food has been lambasted by an American food critic. Now, William Grimes says that, as far as he's concerned, the pasty isn't tasty. Or is that the pasty isn't testy? Well, I've no idea. Pronunciation of the English language. Anyway, he said he's had dozens of them. They're too large and heavy to be used for anything other than house foundations. Cornwall, England, he said, probably suffers more bad food per square mile than anywhere else in the civilised world.
And how did the Cornish feel about this?
Well, bloated, mainly, but... But those who haven't just eaten the pasty are up in arms, because the pastry-based repository for old vegetables and meats you wouldn't otherwise eat is one of the building blocks on which their culture is founded.
You're not very keen on pasties, are you?
Well, no, I'm staying neutral on the issue, but I do think this slur on the breeze-block-like, artery-clogging mainstay of the West Country diet is a little unfair. And as a token of support to pasty manufacturers, we've dug out from the archive this wonderful noise of a single Cornish pasty being set down on a table. There is, however, one other slightly alarming aspect to this story. One of the shopkeepers who's most up in arms runs something called the Lizard Pasty Shop. Explains a lot, doesn't it? They sell a range of pasties that change colour to blend in with their background. That's our first batch of contenders. But who's going to go forward to the final, Vicky?
Right, well, I'm taking my role very seriously. I've made notes. Not Frank Sinatra, because I've been to California, and after that, anywhere's heaven. I don't need a real thing. Not the Cornish with their pasty problem. They still have a thriving fudge industry. Nothing to complain about.
They do, actually. That's true.
So I think by default, the bees that hit windscreens and then their murderers simply spend more time with themselves.
Dead animals.
I think it's the dead animals.
Dead Californian animals goes through.
Right. Okay. Dead animals from California is our first finalist.
So let's go on to our next contenders, please.
One of our favourite publications on this programme is the magazine Psychic News.
Tomorrow's news, today.
Psychic News is an excellent paper, of course, except that everybody always wins the bingo. But a recent edition, though, the recent edition had a rather odd feature in it. There was a big advert on the front page. Big advert. Seeking contestants for Ready Steady Cook.
Yeah, which we don't really understand. Why would Ready Steady Cook advertise in Psychic News? And does that mean that in the next series all the contestants will be psychic?
Hello, Fern Britton here. Let's welcome today's first contestant. It's Gary from Huddersfield. Gary, what's in your bag?
Well, Fern, I've brought an eye of newt, a toe of frog, I've got some wool of bat, and here, as you can see, I've got a tongue of dog.
And what's your final item?
A Twix.
And over to our celebrity chef, Anthony Worrell Thompson. Anthony, you've got a newt's eye, a frog's toe, some wool of bat, and a dog's tongue. So, what are you going to make from that?
A Cornish pasty.
And now, more spooky news.
Yes, very spooky news. A good bad week, this. Someone called Earl Hamner, who is the creator of top 70s TV series The Waltons. Hey! Mr. Hamner believes that he is haunted by the ghost of the actor who used to play Grandpa. Hamner says, regarding these hauntings, that he sometimes hears the voices of Grandpa and the other actors saying their lines, such as the famous Goodnight, John Boy, which used to end every show.
Yeah, well, you know, I hear those voices too. And even weirder, I see their faces. Except it's not spooky. It's called the repeat.
Now, next up, it was a bad week for teachers.
Yeah,
a
very bad week for teachers, because once more their profession is open to ridicule because of the frankly ridiculous suggestion by the Professional Association of Teachers that dogs should be trained as classroom assistants. They would be used, apparently, to round up the children and be useful for looking for items of lost property, like gym shoes and all those other things you're going to drop if a large dog is chasing after you. This suggestion came from one Wendy Dibble, a delegate at the annual PAT conference, who said,
"A big dog would be helpful for breaking up fights and looking for lost gym shoes or Barbie dolls. They would also lick up any spilt milk or crisps that children dropped on the floor."
Right, so they're vacuum cleaners as well, are they? I mean, would you want your Barbie doll back after it had been in the mouth of a dog that also licks up milk and crisps? I don't think so. And what's going to happen when Education Minister David Blunkett arrives to check whether the experiment's working with Lucy, his guide dog?
"The experiment is certainly a success, and during my current tour of Britain's schools, Lucy has had more sex than she's ever had in her life."
Oh, dear, dear. Just briefly, I must say, I won't hear a word against Lucy. She is one of my all-time heroines. Ever since, I don't know if you remember this, but she was once sick on the floor of the House of Commons while William Hague was making a speech. It's absolutely true, isn't it, Mr. Hague?
Indeed, it is true. This dog is a communist. Its actions show the real face of so-called New Labour, and this party will not stand idly by
while... Yes, all right, thank you, anyway.
Now, next, actually, is another dog story. It's not been a good week for canines altogether. They've been run over by Big Arnie. They've been forced...
I'll be back.
Yes, all right.
Being over my dog.
Yes. Honestly, Joe gets to laugh. He does it 8 times. I can't believe it.
It's one of the rules by which I live my life.
They've also been painted in silly colours.
Yeah, apparently someone tipped off the RSPCA when Kerry Lanigan, 22, from King's Langley in Hertfordshire, painted her Labrador Paddy with blue and orange dots of children's face paint. And it happened at the barbecue where, according to Kerry, everyone decided to paint their faces.
One of those barbecues, eh? Yes, I know. Anyway, Kerry goes on to say that while everyone was painting their faces, quote, "Paddy seemed anxious not to be left out." Paddy seemed anxious not to be left out? How did they know? Was this like some Lassie film? "What's that you're trying to tell us, Paddy? Why can't I have some face paint too, you crazy funsters? You feel left out of the barbecue? You'd like an undercooked beef burger, and you'd like to wear the apron with the picture of the bra and pants on it."
Anyway, there must be lots of different ways of painting a dog.
Fine, so, the art of dog painting is one sadly lost in the modern era. The great dog painters of classical times would gild their horns, creating magnificent chiaroscuro effects with the brushwork. Nowadays, the modernists just throw paint all over them, a style known as the dog's pollocks.
Okay, well, some very tough choices to be made here. Lots of bad weeks to choose from. Haunted by the Waltons, taught by a dog.
I think Earl Hamner, the haunted man. Because I particularly hate those kind of down-home TV series where nothing happens. So I will go with him, the first one.
The man who's haunted by the Waltons is our second semi-finalist. Actually, the more I think about it, the more I think that's totally fair. Oh, do I hear the sound of a guitar? Yes, I do indeed. Because people are pouring into Cornwall, of course, ready for next week's eclipse. And already residents are complaining of an invasion of New Age travellers, don't they always, as they set up camp around hilltop monuments and sacred sites. One local vicar has been trying to encourage some charity amongst angry parishioners by pointing out that, hey, in his own way, Jesus himself was a New Age traveller, wasn't he? Our very own middle-aged traveller.
Your impression of a vicar?
Yes. A vicar in comedy land always talks like that, doesn't he?
My dad's a vicar.
Our very own middle-aged traveller Mervyn Stutter will now sing a suitable hymn.
Jesus was a New Age traveller, he just never had a van. Never had a dog on a piece of string. Or said amazing name. He never dressed up ex-army or put colour in his hair. And he never wore Doc Martens, but he would have done if he'd had a pair. Jesus, Jesus never wore fatigues. He got high on the Holy Ghost, he was in a quite different league. He'd travel round from town to town, eating dates and figs, stopping wherever ley lines meet and improvising gigs. He'd preach a little parable, then break into a song, with Judas playing bongos and the rest sort of strumming along. Jesus, Jesus loved that travelling band. Gave his life up to the road, but his folks didn't understand. And the right wing didn't like him, he was far too radical. His mother was a virgin, and he had no real dad at all. The child support agency said, you're costing us a ward. Better tell us who your dad is, son. And Jesus answered, God. Jesus, Jesus, tell the Israelites. Will he come back and see us soon? I don't know, he might.
And now, no respite for Victoria Coronet. It's straight on to the next batch of Bad Weeks. It's been a bad week for sumo wrestlers.
They've tested positive for lard.
Anabolic pizza. Actually, that nearly is it, because the thing is that they're apparently eating too much junk food and they've been told to diet. I can hardly believe that, but it's true. They've been told to be less fat. So at last, we know what the mystical chants at the beginning of a sumo bout actually mean.
Excuse me. Does my bum look small in this?
Yet another dog story now. It's been a bad week for family pet dog Tarico. Poor Tarico was on the lookout for the company of a female pooch, spotted one, climbed on, and found he was humping a hedgehog. No more to be said, really. Except that Tarico is more than emotionally scarred.
Right, okay.
Right, now so moving on.
Now. This is a weird one.
It's been a bad week for those of us who think that Mozart is a genius. Because someone called John Cranity has different ideas. Mr. Cranity says that Mozart was friends with his great-great-great-great-grandfather, and it was he and not Mozart at all who wrote the music. According to Cranity,
Mozart was a fraud and doesn't deserve credit for my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's music.
Cranity also says he has the proof, but it has to be kept under lock and key and that no one can see it. None of which seems particularly persuasive, but I think, you know, that we should believe him because he has one compelling plank to his argument. If you don't believe him, he'll hunt you down and kill you. He feels fairly strongly about it, and I, for one, am willing to go along with him. In fact, I think we should send out a message of support to Mr. Cranity. How many people here think that his granddad's granddad wrote Mozart's music? Everyone that does, say yes.
Yes! That's pretty good.
That is all right. So, Mr. Cranity, if you're listening, if you can twist the dial with your arms restricted in that straitjacket, this programme is recorded at the Celebrity Bingo Hall in Inverness.
But you see, it's just worked. He's convinced everyone here. This could be a whole new technique of persuasion. Why bother having to win an argument on merit?
Great Britain must not enter the Euro. I ask you to believe this not because I'm a Tory, nor because I have the best interests of this great nation close to my heart. I ask you to believe this because if you don't, I will hunt you to the ends of the earth and kill you.
Okay, right, there we go. There's our final batch of bad weeks. Vicky, which one of those do you think is going to go through to the final?
I think I have to choose the sumo wrestlers who have to go on a diet.
The sumo wrestlers,
I agree.
Image. Dieting sumos.
Thin wrestling men in G-strings. Touches my heart.
Very large G-strings.
They look more, I always thought they look more like sort of upside-down cycling helmets, those things. You know what I mean?
Now, we've got some good finalists now. We've got Vicky's Bridesmaid Hell. We've got the Dieting Sumos. We've got the Dead Animals from California. And we've got the man who is haunted by the Waltons. Very good. But before we choose the winner, as ever, we also ask our audience here at Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club to write down if they've had a bad week so we can have a look at these and see if any of these are going to go through to the final. And we've got a few here. Let's see what Vicky thinks of these.
Yeah, I've got one from a guy called Neil. When I came home from a tour abroad, my family had moved.
That's quite a bad week for Neil, though.
Well, it might be a good week for his family, so you know.
Never know, do you? This is another good, but weird week. After the torrential downpour, my husband went up into the loft to check our roof was leaking, and it was. But even worse than that, he found a life-size cutout of Freddie Mercury. Lurking in the corner. I think that's a stupendously bad one. That's really spooky. Do you like any of those, Vicky? Do any of those appeal to you?
I'm not sure that any of those win the prize.
Okay, our four finalists then are your own Bridesmaid Hell with the 6 foot blonde, the Sumos who have had to stop eating pizza, the Dead Animals from California, and the man haunted by the Waltons. Which of those, Victoria Corrin, is the worst week in the world this week?
I think I'm going to go with the sumo wrestlers. I feel very sorry for anyone on a diet. I don't think anybody should be on it. But particularly those joyful, plump men. I think they should be allowed to eat to their heart's content.
I agree. Let them pig out. The dieting Japanese sumos are the winners of the world's worst week. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
You have been listening to It's Been a Bad Week with Steve Punch, Hugh Dennis, Emma Clark, John Coleshaw, Marvin Stutter, and special guest Victoria Corrin. It was written by Steve Punch, Hugh Dennis, Steve Knight, Mike Whitehill, Stu Morris, and Steve Cochran. The broadcast assistant was Trudy Stevens, the producer Neil Rosser, and the executive producer Dirk Mears. It's Been a Bad Week. It's a Celador production for BBC Radio 2. Frankly, I am flat-jawed in stupefaction.